Thank you so much, my friends. What a response. This is incredible.
Doug Ford's political honeymoon as Ontario's new premier has been as far from the sugary sweet PR-able opportunities such nascent political leaderships usually bring.
We ran on ending the cap and trade, reducing gas prices by 10 cents a litre, ending the carbon tax, the worst tax Canada has ever seen.
In the first month of his premiership of Canada's most populous province and home to the country's largest and wealthiest city, Toronto, he's fulfilled the promise of his campaign, which, in the closing days of it, he admitted openly to not really knowing what his platform for government would be or what it all really stood for. Well, now we know. Ford has scrapped several environmental protection policies that Ontario had led the way with. He's initiated the reverse of the province's educational initiatives, backtracking on sex education curriculums, for example, to those created in 1998, and unpicking provisions for the teaching of Canada's Indigenous histories in the country's schools, which was a key recommendation of Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Most recently, Ford set up a fight with Toronto itself, picking up in many ways where his late brother Rob, famous for his fondness of crack, who served as mayor between 2010 and 2014, by announcing plans to nearly halve the number of city councillors in Toronto, from the current number of 47 to 25.
More politicians is not the answer. And now, more than ever, the city of Toronto needs to get some big things done. So we're going to streamline Toronto City Council.
This, he said, would match Toronto's city electoral map with the number of constituencies it has in federal elections. In reality, it marks an attempt, to his opponents at least, to eradicate the number of councillors elected in downtown Toronto, the majority of which represent a party and political ideology very different from his. So what does all this mean for the political picture nationally? Those not versed in the patterns of Canadian politics over the past decade or so would be forgiven for thinking, at a glance, that surprisingly perhaps, swings and surprises are something of a regular occurrence here, where political models are broken rather freely and precedents are overturned in the space of one political term.
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
Take Justin Trudeau's own victory in 2015, for example.
Canadians from all across this great country sent a clear message tonight. It's time for a change in this country, my friends. A real change.
Projections ahead of that vote had him at best winning a minority victory, given that his Liberal Party, the party of the centre in Canadian politics and historically the party of government here, had for the best part of a decade been on a steady decline, losing seats and vote shares consistently. A tide that was stemmed, largely by surprise, in 2015, when his party swept back and won a clear majority. Look at the 2014 provincial election in Alberta too, Canada's oil-making heartland and most conservative province historically. It swung in that election for the first time in its history to the New Democratic Party, the most left-leaning of Canada's national political groups, cracking the stronghold of the area's long-time conservative patrons that was at the time a national news story for the sheer weight of the surprise and the trend-breaking it heralded, perhaps, for Canada's political models. But the reality, political commentators here say, is that Canada's three major parties, although they represent various parts of the political spectrum, in fact all occupy a rather narrow band of political thought. None of the major parties here question the availability of universal healthcare or fight against gun control in Canada, for example. So, when voters leap from one party to another here, several commentators have told me recently, they aren't making the kind of dramatic electoral shift that switching from Democrat to Republican in the US, say, or from Labour to the Conservative Party in the UK might represent.
You're fed up with being deceived. Fed up with paying more and getting less. Fed up with the shady accounting tricks because in the last 15 years, nothing was off the table.
But Doug Ford's premiership so far and his shameless brand, frankly, of uninformed populist thought given that it was voted for by such a convincing margin in Ontario, may well mean something new is underway here. His victory compounded the old divides instituted and exacerbated by his brother Rob at Toronto City Hall, the notion of city versus suburb, urban centres versus rural ones. This may well sound remarkably familiar. It is, of course, the narrative that got Donald Trump, with a little help from his friends, elected to the White House. The comparison should not be overstated or overblown, however. Canada's electoral habits and the tone of its political discourse couldn't be further from that currently dominating politics and media coverage south of the border.
The Ford family will always serve the city of Toronto, the province of Ontario, in this great country of Canada.
But Doug Ford, like his late brother, have shown themselves to be difficult political characters to dismiss here. Their brand of politics is potent for many, even if it's baffling, depressing, and alienating to many more. With a general election slated here in Canada for the autumn of 2019, Canadians across the country should take note of Doug Ford's nascent leadership in Ontario as something of a guide to whether, on a national level, that's the kind of worldview and brand of politics that they want and that best reflects the nation. For Monocle, in Toronto, I'm Tomos Lewis.